You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stukats Podcast.
Chris Cody, I've got one for you. I know that you were eating up the sound from this weekend of Giannis.
I'm not always eating, okay? Like, I get that you just want to like lean on that, but all right, I was eating.
Well, the reason that I bring it up is because Giannis Antetokounmpo, I thought of you when he admitted, and it was just with wonder and delight, that he discovered he had been eating Oreos, but no one had introduced him to Oreos in milk. And so someone did, and he gave a 2-minute dissertation where he explained originally when they told him to put it in milk that he just threw a tray in there and ate it like cereal. He's like, this is delicious with a spoon. He just ate. You can imagine this guy with giant hands and giant everything just eating a bowl of Oreo cereal. And he's like, oh, my God, this is a wonder and a delight. And now he says it is his late night snack. And oh, to be the blessed exercise regimen of an athlete where that guy eats tubs of Oreo cereal. And it was great. I thought of you specifically, Chris, because what a wonder and delight to learn that in adulthood versus in childhood.
I kind of feel like I'm going to get everyone angry at me right now. I kind of prefer Oreos without the milk. I'm not prepared to go out there and say that it's bad with the dunking of the milk, mm-hmm. but I just prefer it softens it. I like the crunch of an Oreo. So it, if you give me the option, I'm just going to take it without the milk.
You break the halves apart?
Yeah.
Chris, the cream heavy bit and then the one without?
Like from split? Rounders? When he's like trying to make
split?
A read?
Mm. You don't split?
I don't split.
Why?
No.
Do you split them? Wow. I mean, you split them every time?
You gotta just bite into it?
I generally just throw the whole thing in my mouth, one biter.
I will say this.
A dry Oreo?
Yeah.
The entire row, just mm-hmm. simultaneously?
Like a pelican? You eat them like a pelican?
The whole row. The way a UFO double would stuffed. Enter my mouth, yes. like sideways.
I will side with Chris and tell you, when I do use milk with my Oreos, it's a very light dip. I will not keep. I don't want it soggy. Oh. I want my Oreo to have a little crunch.
Then it's messy,
to it.
And then like the from when you're going from the glass to your mouth, there's some drippage.
It
like
can't be too soft. You got to be careful. You can't make it all too soft.
It's like cereal. Cereal. There's like a small window of time. You got to eat this now because if you let it sit.
But Giannis was the way he was eating it with a spoon and a bowl. That is how he is eating drenched Oreos, soggy Oreos.
The chocolate chip itself. It's just a vessel for the cream and the milk. Stand alone without cream.
Oh, no, it's
just
good.
A crap cookie.
You don't do that.
It's a terrible cookie.
It's a good cookie. It's a fine cookie. No, even without the cream, it's delicious.
Bad tasting chocolate. Bad cookie.
Wow. Bad cookie. That's a shocking take, but I think Mike's also right. I think the Oreo by itself is super sour.
It's sour. Yeah, it's not at all sweet. It's just like the only point of this is like it's just a contrast, the milk and the cream, and all together. It makes sense, but dry, not spread apart where you lick the cream first and just going in it dry.
No, you're Oroing wrong.
Yeah, you're Oreing. You are, man.
You're not Oroing wrong.
You're Oroing wrong.
Oreoing.
Oreoing.
Are you saying the shell's no good?
Are you wrong?
The shell is just a vessel for everything else. Like the whole profile of the Oreo cookie works.
Right.
When you take all the pieces, milk, cream and cookie
mashed together.
Yes, right. But if you take one of the variables out
they're
of it,
all three
you're
of
just
them alone, they're not
the
they're
disappointing
not,
taste.
They need to be a team. The three of them.
I will tell you the cookie that has the best shell. I don't agree with Mike. First off,
no, you have to agree with Mike.
I don't have to agree with Mike.
This is the grounds. Listen, I'm going to put it to you this way, and this is why you're going to have to agree with Mike.
Okay.
If I sold you Oreos without the cream, you would not buy that as cookies.
Oh hell no, yeah.
Probably not.
And so that's what Mike's
saying.
I wouldn't
do that as a death punishment.
Okay, but if I happen to pick one apart, I just eat the shell. I'm not going to be that disappointed.
No, but that's not what he's saying. He's saying as a cookie, as a standalone cookie, it's a crappy cookie, and he's not wrong. The cream is what makes that cookie.
All right, but there are some cookies where if you pull them apart, like a Nutter Butter, if you take the Nutter Butter and you pull it apart and just eat the shell, it is absolutely delicious.
That cream is nothing without, like, that cream by itself. You think that cream by itself
no,
is
it's
delightful?
Together.
Yes.
No, but I'm saying this is
a tub of Oreo cream.
I'm saying this is a 50-50 pie chart.
Will lick the cream off the Oreo.
Never
and
do
then,
that.
No?
No.
I'm with you, Chris, because you can lick the cream, yes. But Mike's talking about a tub of that cream.
Nah, get it out
that's
of here.
Gross. That's just too much. You need the cookie. It needs the cookie in order
50,
to contra-
50 pie chart.
That
they need each other.
They both make same salaries in this marriage.
If I've if I've just put solely the cookie, the cream in a tub, and milk on the side, you're going to go probably cream first, then milk, and then the last pick always
cream's
would be
last.
The cookie.
Cream's last
what?
For me.
The cream is the cookie.
Mike, I will agree with you that the cookie, why are you, you don't have to bash the cookie. It could be a lesser.
That's what he's doing. See, he's doing, you're right. You're bashing the cookie for no reason.
Why are you bashing the cream? The Oreo cookie in itself is a gimmick.
I'm not bashing the cream. I'm getting defensive because you're coming at the cookie, so I'm just attacking the cream, even though I don't really hate the cream that much.
Oreo cookie sucks.
You put me in a spot here where I'm attacking the cream. I don't want to attack the cream. I love the cream.
I see what's happening here. So Mike likes the white cream. But
don't you put that on me.
The black.
You're not going to bring race into everything.
I didn't bring up race. I'm just clarifying.
Race into
everything.
I will tell you, the golden Oreos, superior cookie.
Yeah. How about that? Yeah.
Superior cookie, but worse Oreo. But worse Oreo.
Precisely, because it's the whole experience. Yeah. Worse Oreo experience, but if I'm just eating a cookie without milk, and I'm just going, nom. I'm just nomchu.
So you like a cookie experience society that's devoid of the darker cookie.
I know what you want me to do right now. Let me tell you something, Amino Hassan. Despite the fact that you're trying to lay this bear trap out for me, I won't shy away from it. The white Oreo cookie is better than the black Oreo cookie.
Oh, shit.
As a standalone Oreo experience.
Mike,
however, when we bring milk into the equation and you have the whole ensemble,
more white.
Then I will absolutely
say the
black and white Oreo is the best way.
What about the reverse Oreo? You ever had the reverse Oreo?
No, get that out of here. Yeah. I don't like any of those. Although the dulce de leche Oreo is
birthday cake, tremendous.
How do we feel about the thin?
You like all the white that surrounds the Oreo, but not the black.
The thin's a little underrated.
You want to know how savage I am about my Oreo experience? The double mega stuffed. The most possible cream in my Oreo.
No, get
that's
that out
what
here.
I go to.
No.
Yeah,
give me normally
more,
stuffed. Normally
you,
stuffed.
You like more of the white stuff and less of the black stuff.
Yeah, Amino Hassan, formerly of ESPN. I do. I like more of the white stuff than the black stuff in my Oreo experience. Sue me. It tastes a lot more yummy.
I am going to sue you. I'm going to take that. I'm going to take that to court with Carl Douglas.
I feel like we can meet in the middle here. I don't like what's happening here.
Carl's probably
again. I love everything's political now.
It's such a good cookie, and we're tearing it apart.
That's what you do with it. You tear it apart because it's an inferior cookie.
Oh, it's inferior.
Yeah,
it's inferior.
Don't sleep on the thins, by the way. You eat like seven of those things.
Thins are terrible.
It's a mind game. You can eat like 12 of them, and it just feels like you've eaten four.
First off, they're good as is. The standard Oreo is fantastic, okay? The double stuffed mega is fantastic. Yes, I'm with Mike. Wait, if I have a choice to go fatter or thinner, I'm going fatter every time.
Stugatz, just stop for a second.
What happened?
Whittingham, what did you just say to me? What did you just whisper in my ear as just marveling and just beholding the marvelous creature that is Stugatz that doesn't want to just be in the conversation that we're in presently working, but showed me his computer.
That's important.
Wait till you guys hear what's on his computer here, that Stugatz is waving his computer at me as we're talking about Oreos and an impassioned discussion argument has broken out. What, Chris Whittingham, did you just say into my ears?
Stugatz's batting average with showing you his computer has to be in the 100s. Because he showed you, and he's waiting for the day that you go, wow, holy shit, Stugatz, that's incredible. And it's never coming. Stugatz, it's never coming. And you had such an unsatisfied look on your face when he's breaking the segment to hold up his computer at a tilt.
So we're working here, okay?
I kept talking while I was doing it.
And the construct, the formula.
Broke down the thins and the fatties.
Shut up for a second. And the formula of our show is some form of, hey, I'm trying to work here.
Yeah.
So the Oreos conversation that I thought was going just fine. I thought we were enjoying each other. We were arguing. It was spirited. Mike Ryan said an outlandish thing.
I wasn't enjoying it.
But was also correct.
What was outlandish?
Well, just, I think most people would say that the Oreo cookie itself by itself, it just has a very high Q rating. So when you disparage it, even with context and nuance of separating it from the cream, very few people would say that's a bad cookie. But I agree with you. You place it against other cookies. It's a very pedestrian cookie.
Thank you for hearing me.
But during this,
because I wasn't tearing apart I love the entire Oreo experience.
That doesn't sound like
that's like saying you eat Lucky Charms without the marshmallows.
Experiences.
Feel like you had some economic anxiety that you were going through.
During this, while everyone was talking, Stugatz was waving his computer at me. Go ahead and tell everyone, including these people here, what you were waving at me maniacally, trying to get me to stop the segment we're in so we could do whatever it is you were doing.
Quarterback Josh Norman has 7 forced fumbles this season. That ranks second for the 49ers in a single season since 1994. Roy Barker, Barky, had 8 in 96, and Ahmad Brooks had 5 in 2009. The only reason I showed it to you is because Sunday night we were doing the postgame show, and you seemed obsessed with the fact that Josh Norman is doing nothing except running around football fields trying to poke the ball loose from people, and that's it. And then someone wrote GOAT, and I wanted to respond, he's been the worst cornerback in football this year. And so I was just sharing it with my friend. I mean, you know, it was interesting to you. You brought it up. You brought it to my attention, and I wanted to pay you back, and I did. During an Oreo segment.
7 forced fumbles.
Huh? I know. How about that? That's pretty
reading
good,
a tweet,
right?
Reading a tweet that's that long requires like a squint and like a
during
like,
the segment.
Yeah, like 20 just, seconds of reading. Holding,
he wanted me to read all of that. He wanted me just
at active, a tilt. At a tilt.
Actively playing defense against us working.
I'm really big into the multiverse, so I like thinking about the alternate reality where Stugatz doesn't show you that, but is burnt up inside because he has this information to share.
I have to show it to someone. Yeah.
And he has no one to share it with. Goes home, drowns his sorrows in a fifth of vodka.
The thing about that that's funny is that he could have shared it with me and we could have shared a joyous moment at any other time, but one that he chose.
He
chose.
But I'm trying to stay in the moment, Dan. It's here now.
I know, but if you were paying attention, you didn't know until I told you yesterday that he was a puncher of footballs, and today you've discovered it in a tweet verifying something that you did not know yesterday. Now you're pleased with your research and your reporting.
Well, I was letting you know that your research and reporting was correct.
He's just spent the whole season punching people.
So as a reminder, you guys remember the bit about Stugatz's brain, just having a lot of Stugatz in there? Right now, there was a Stugatz who had that tweet on a piece of paper, rushing past all the other Stugatzes, the Oreo Stugatzes.
The factory of Stugatz.
Breaking news, guys.
Look, Dan, this thing you were talking about. Exactly.
One of them's like, no, don't tell Dan. This is not a good time. Like, no, we got to tell him. This is very important.
Never, always a good time.
They put the keys in, the nuclear keys, turn them at the same time. Break open the codes.
There was definitely a filibuster among the Stugatzes that got overrided.
The rest of the Stugatzes were yelling no, but as with this Stugatz, the one who sits next to me every day, this one was running in with a card, ignoring them. Saying, you know when's the best time to share with my friend Dan?
Which is funny because there was the one Stugatz on the mic talking.
Yeah, I was just showing him, but distracting him.
It's not talking, though. It's making certain noises, pretending to listen. This is my life with him. Like, my guess is Stugatz has listened to 9% of this show.
That's high. I mean,
and that he spends the rest of the time nodding, laughing, and pretending that he's paying attention or understands. Is that number high or low, Mike?
Oh, it's probably on the money. 9% of the time, I would say it. I was just marveling at how much I enjoy the three of you together. You have a nice rapport. It's not unlike an Oreo cookie. You got the milk over there in Stugatz. You got the creamy filling with Dan.
Nah, Dan's the cookie.
I'm the creamy filling. There's a fat
you're
joke
the other
in
part.
There somewhere.
Yeah.
7 forced fumbles, though.
You don't want to park your car in this cookie's neighborhood.
Whether you hydrate to live or live to hydrate, Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. With 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink plus 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, all in a single sugar-free stick. Are you heading to the airport on a long flight? Or do you need something after your flag football game? Well, if I was you, I would definitely go with Liquid IV just for the electrolytes so you don't feel run down. And I know for me, Liquid IV helps me start my day in the morning, and it helps give me the energy to do stuff like cut my yard and wash my car and work out and just face the day. And you can get your energy back while drinking something that's delicious. And when I say delicious, you can pick from flavors like pear, white peach, green grape, lemon lime, and more. Liquid IV is non-GMO, free from gluten, dairy, and soy. However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code DAN at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration using code DAN today at liquidiv.com.
Don Lebatard.
I haven't told you guys that on my honeymoon in Africa, the hot air balloon caught fire.
What?
Yes.
What?
Stugats.
There are animals beneath you.
Jesus.
Animals that can eat you. And I look up and the balloon itself has a hole that is growing because it is on fire. And the guy seemed like it wasn't the scariest thing
That's
in
the
world.
Key. It's like looking at the flight attendant, making sure if they're not panicked, you're good.
And they were not panicked, but we absolutely did crash land near some dung. But the basket ended up sideways, just sort of spilling us out into the African plain. Yes. The basket's supposed to land flat. It did not land flat. It landed and then went to its side and spit us out. And my head ended up near some fresh animal dung of some sort.
When does poop graduate to dung?
When you're in the African plain.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugats.
Stugats, I wish to be called out. Not that the audience needs any provocation on this front other than me opening my big fat mouth when I am wrong, when I am inconsistent, when I do some of the stuff that I make fun of you for and Colin Cowherd for, which is not remembering the take that you had 4 weeks ago and how different it is from the take it is that you have today. But I just reached out by DM to a local Miami Dolphins fan named Pablo, who believes that I have been the guy saying the things about
don't
Tua.
Reach out to Pablo.
I don't know anything else about Pablo. There are many Pablos in South Florida. Not as many Danny
I know
Williams.
Which Pablo that you're talking
What'd
about.
What'd you say
but
to
this
Pablo?
This particular Pablo was giving you the business.
This guy is a sub-tweet samurai.
Okay, well, but he is someone that we follow as a show, and we like to support the people who support us, even if they're critical.
I do not want to endorse any of Pablo's behavior. He's just a fan of the show, and I appreciate the support. I know nothing else about him.
I don't know if this is the same Pablo that we're talking about.
No, if it's Dolphins and Pablo, and he's going at you, I know exactly which Pablo.
Okay, and
is.
I'd like to know where I'm being inconsistent on my Tua take, because all I've tried, I think, this is my perspective, you tell me if I'm wrong, for the 15 healthy games that he's played over 2 years, I've said I don't know how to factor in how to do some of the math on this, given the skill position limits that they've had before Waddle and given the offensive line problems that are almost historic in terms of allowing hurries.
What is Pablo saying? Should we get him on the
phone? That I have been very critical of Tua, or that every Monday all I was saying is that Tua is not the answer, when I was saying that Tua hasn't looked special, and now Dan Orlovsky is on television saying he looks like Drew Brees. That he is doing Drew Brees-esque when it comes to the accuracy, the decision-making, how quickly Tua is getting the football out, because he has to, at least in part, and how hard it is to learn some of this stuff over 15 games, 2 seasons, when everything is moving that fast and you're coming back from injury and your offensive line isn't blocking and Gaskin is your running back.
You know exactly where I stand on Tua. I love him like a son.
Mm-hmm.
I hope she never listens to this. I love him more than my actual daughter.
Wow. Julia.
Yeah, I think he's got such a good heart.
Mm-hmm.
Good we should kid. All aspire to be Tua.
Yeah.
But you love him more than his mother loves him.
Yes,
Tua's mother loves him.
I love him so much he may have to get a restraining order. I'm telling you that right now. But Dolphin fans are batshit crazy when it comes to Tua. And an absence of praise is perceived as being critical.
I have a stat here from Field Yates that would support Pablo and give him more ammunition against Dan.
Let's go. Well, it's
start
against
of the day. Start
I love
of
Pablo.
The day. It is the start of the day. Start of the day. Start of the day. It is the start of the day. Start of the day. Start of the day. It is the start of the day. Start of the day, start of the day, it is the start of the day.
Again, courtesy of Field Yates, at Field Yates on Twitter. Tua completed 27 of 33, 81.8% of his passes on Sunday, making him just the fourth quarterback in NFL history to complete at least 80% of his passes in back-to-back games with at least 30 attempts. Tua has now completed 70.5% of his passes this season, second in the NFL.
And I had said, and maybe this is the place, Mike, that people are willing to come after me on, and I think this part is fair. I've called the race on him and Herbert. I did.
Premature.
And Tua's taking a step forward this year, and Herbert's taking a step back.
Herbert's still, his stats are still pretty good. It's just people have a perception of him that's probably more glowing than it actually is.
Because, and I'll tell you, to the
hair,
that helps. It also, but Stugatz, I'm not kidding you when I tell you in terms of when we do some of this analysis on who's a game manager, who looks the part, never mind all the Pro Football Focus numbers, just who drops back to pass, and you're like, whoa. Herbert on accuracy, arm strength, and throwing the ball downfield last year looked like somebody who was doing it differently behind a different offensive line. And that's part of the measurements. Yes. It's like to be able to stand back there for a second and find Mike Williams as your second option versus what Tua's been doing, which is let me throw it 3 yards behind the line here in Jacksonville or against Jacksonville in London, throw it into the end zone to waddle because we can't. We're totally constipated and I don't have enough help and I'm injured.
Those are conventional stats, and I can understand why you would gravitate to it, but I do think that the stats that I pointed out yesterday are far more impressive, like average points added from the quarterback position since his healthy return. I use that in air quotes because I still think he's dealing with injuries. He's the best quarterback in the league. Now in that top 10 since week 7, he also has the fewest air yards per attempt, but he's at 6.5 now, and he is stretching the field a little bit more, and expected points added takes into account the difficulty of throws.
And when you're talking, maybe that's the place that's fair criticism of me. I'm asking you guys, like, where have I gotten this wrong? Where I don't want to be revisionist in my analysis of this. I feel like while watching this, I've been marveling at, like, man, we've sped up all this stuff at this position. It's a really hard position to play. Everything's moving really fast out there. Learning from college to pros when you're not trying to rehab an injury, we should probably get more than 15 starts before making an assessment on this. But Herbert sped up the curve when he comes out, and it's like, wait a minute. He doesn't look at all like Justin Fields does out there. The first year when he's coming out there, he doesn't look at all like Trevor Lawrence looks out there. He doesn't look at all like Trey Lance looks out there.
He really sped up the curve. But the guy who's really responsible for it, I think, is Patrick Mahomes. Like, to come out the way Patrick Mahomes came out.
He waited 3 years, Stugatz. He waited behind Alex Smith. Patrick Mahomes waited and did it the traditional way of you learn. We have sped up all of this so that it needs to be done in 14 games or you're bust.
Right.
And furthermore, it's so hyperventilating both ways that if Keyshawn Johnson misses a month of games, like clearly he has when it comes to the Dolphins, and I understand why, they've been a regional team, not a national team, and Tua is the only thing that seems to make them a more national team. I understand how Keyshawn Johnson, if he's 3 weeks late to the analysis, would sound like, oh, you haven't been watching. You're saying he's still a bad quarterback. You still think he's game managing out there. That's not what he's been doing the last 3 weeks. And that offense is still super limited. Like, if the evolution of this quarterback is, I mean in terms of talent and blocking for him and allowing hurries. But Orlovsky's watching this and he's saying, oh, wait a minute. That's the highest compliments to Gotts is Breeze-esque accuracy, because
yes,
that will help you in places where perhaps you don't move around as well as Kyler Murray and, you know, Lamar Jackson. If you're saying Breeze-esque accuracy, what you're saying is strongest, highest in the history of the position.
Brady would be a higher compliment, but you're right. I mean, it's a great compliment to throw it to him when we're sitting here questioning him and you have guys saying, hey, this is Breeze-like.
But this is four games of difference on the same network.
Four games against bad teams, we should point out.
To be a pocket passer at that height, he's listed at 6'1", but he's on the shorter side. To be a pocket passer, not move the pocket, you have to be deathly accurate. You have to be. That's what made Drew Breeze like an alien, his ability to still scan the field over his offensive line and be incredibly accurate. Baker Mayfield always misses high when he's in the pocket. That's all his interceptions. They're high. It's because he can't see over his offensive line unless he rolls a pocket. Tua is a bit more statuesque than Russell Wilson or Kyler Murray. And even Baker Mayfield, he hangs in the pocket, so he has to be accurate. And if he's being compared to Drew Brees, that is tremendous.
The part that I'm most interested in is, and please, if you want, at any point, tell me, and I don't need to encourage you guys to do this, but point out wherever it is I've been inconsistent or have my hypocrisies or where it is that I've flatly been wrong.
Is that fair, though? Like, he's also been inconsistent, right?
Well, the part that I want to talk to you about, though, because this part has been something that I just didn't expect to happen, how quickly it's happened, where it's like, hey, get in the game and hurry up and figure it out. You're a bust in 15 games. You're a first-round pick. I know the money's changed at this position. You're not healthy. Your fingers hurt. Your hips hurt. You got to get back from rehab. Your offensive line is allowing a lot of hurries. Devontae Parker might not be that good, but be good in 15 games or you're out of here because Justin Herbert was good in 5 games. Let's go.
But no one's making anyone write people off in 15 games. You can just be patient. It's just people are
it's
doing
just a
it
new
for
standard. But that's how we're doing it now.
But you can control what you say. You can just not say, you know what, let's wait and see.
You're talking about the analysts, and I'm with you, but I mean, his own front office seems to be impatient by their very public pursuit of another quarterback.
And a quarterback that I think most people would still assess, just if we're talking about just physical skills, what he's done at the position, I think most people are still taking Deshaun Watson. But the part that I wanted to talk to you about, Mike, because I think that your Browns Baker Mayfield coverage has been afflicted with it, and it's something that just simply happens as all of this, as you've watched 20 years of football and you as a Cleveland Brown fan or a Miami Dolphin fan have seen at that position, have tried to talk yourself into so many Chad Hennies and AJ Feelys, and you've seen these glimpses in here and there, and then a quarterback like Baker Mayfield shows up or Tua shows up, and the amount of hope and expectation that is placed on him, this is what the burden of being a franchise quarterback is. This is why it's hard for young people to not get ruined by the pressure of breaking at that position. Is you add to the stakes and everything else. Oh, look at Justin Herbert playing out there on a white stallion. And look at Joe Burrow throwing the ball way downfield to Ja'Marr Chase. And you're like, Tua, you need to be doing that right now with Waddle, right now. Waddle, get in the sport with men. Get in there and from game one, beat Ja'Marr Chase, because we've sped up on our analysis. We've locked in all our hope, all our fantasy dreams, everything else. Be great right now. You bust in 15 games or get him out here. Get him out of here for an alleged sexual predator.
Yeah, it's actually kind of why I know you're trying to make the argument for impatience, but I've been like patient to a fault with Baker Mayfield, because unlike Tua, like he definitely turned the franchise around. It's irrefutable that he did. They won one game. Yes. He did.
No, he did. But here's the problem. You have to make these decisions inside of like 3 or 4 years, because everyone is looking for that quarterback at a lesser salary, and then you have to make the decision.
So now it's a year and a half, though? On two, it felt like the decision was being made before a full season of sample size.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but Baker had, the team had one win in two seasons. Baker shows up, and last year they win a road playoff game and go to the divisional round of the playoffs while he is playing well. Like, I've seen it with Baker, and I am not in a hurry, because I know for 20 years I was searching for someone to be merely as good as him. And what he is flawed, a ceiling that's a lot lower than probably I anticipated, but still, irrefutably, undeniably, the best quarterback I've had since returning to the NFL.
All of your analysis, though, is plagued, is it not, by the scars and memories of pouring that into Kelly Holcomb.
Right. So I'm not in a rush to push him out the door.
This is the same thing that Tua fans are doing.
100%. Correct. No, only I have a bit more success when it comes to Baker, because he actually made it to the playoffs, and there's a longer sample. And it's also probably damning on Baker that he's been, this is now year four, and I'm still like, is this the guy? Because he turned the franchise around to the point that they're on the precipice of being a good team. They have the pieces. I think everybody can look at their talent and be like, why is this team 6-6? Now is he good enough? He's certainly turned it around, but can he get you to that next phase? And that's why you're looking at guys like Russell Wilson, who coincidentally can't get a first down anymore.
Right.
And being like, that's a clear and obvious upgrade.
But sometimes good is good enough. Right. Sometimes just being good is good enough. I'm 2 weeks removed from praying that Mike White would be the next franchise quarterback for the Jets. Like, I would take Tua right now to be my quarterback.
Jared Goff made a Super Bowl.
It plagues the analysis, though, Mike, in a way that is...
Jared Goff.
I'm wearing it, though. It plagued my analysis for years. I'm being open and honest with you. I'm not in a hurry to push Baker Mayfield out. I need to know what my options are to upgrade.
But it plagues the analysis. All this stuff, this pressurized, hope-filled stuff, and the hyperventilation and the speed with which the analysis comes and that we need a result that's determinative. It not only plagues the front end, it plagues the back end as you see Cam Newton appearing physically spent at 32, and it takes a month with a pin in his finger for you to say, oh, Russell Wilson ain't all that. A month with a pin in his finger and his throwing hand.
By the way, Cam, like a week ago, everyone was like, he's finally healthy again. He's back.
It is amazing to watch.
He was like, he's back.
He was like that. He announced
Cam was, yeah. With Russell, it's been weird, though, because he was bad, you know, back half of last season. He wasn't very good. He got off to a great start. He was not good towards the end.
Honestly, when I'm watching this Russell Wilson broken physically, I'm literally thinking about the conversations he must be having with his wife, the most honest conversations about trying to get out of there and whether he was like, man, this team blows right now. I need out.
Like, I mean, his agent gave you 14, put his name to it.
But what I'm saying is, for Russell Wilson to go to those lengths, for Russell Wilson, management guy, Seattle guy, never said anything controversial other than vitamin water cures concussions. For Russell Wilson to be the guy who comes out and says, I need a trade out of here, I'd love the honest conversations there to know, what did he see? Did he see this thing? Like, looking around and be like, wait a minute, everyone's gone now. Seattle stinks. If I don't carry this thing and I'm perfectly healthy because they haven't blocked for me in three seasons, they're going to wreck the end of my career. Like, I'm wondering whether Russell Wilson saw from the inside, I got to get out of here, man. Pete Carroll's not going to help me at the end. He's going to look like an old guy chewing gum and throwing his flip phone on the field.
I think the other thing, too, to think about Russell Wilson, I'd be interested to see like who has this answer, is the offense that is supposed to let Russ cook has never been there. Like, they've always tried to establish the run and with five different backs that aren't really that good. Chris Carson got hurt. He's out for the year. Like, they're trying to establish the run with nobody, and they're supposed to be letting him cook. And when he does, he has that streak where he had last season. We were in like seven games where he was throwing like 10 touchdowns and no picks. The matter of fact is the offensive scheme, I think.
Well, I would tend to believe you, right? I think what's happening here is very clearly the injury to the throwing hand. But he has a lot of explanations, and unlike Baker Mayfield, and unlike Tua, and unlike a lot of the other quarterbacks that are on that fringe right now, because the last month, you're like, wow, this is like a fringe quarterback.
They're 3-8. Yeah, they're 3-8.
They're bad, but you've seen him do it. He's missing open guys. He's not completing 5-yard
seam routes. He's throwing interceptions in the end zone to end games when you're used to him winning those games, close games, always in close games. Then the most feared thing in the sport for two or three of those years was, here's Russell Wilson coming down the field at the end of a close game again.
Like, we're not even, we don't need the All-22 and Dan Orlovsky pointing a pen to the video. We see on the broadcast DK Metcalf wide open.
Yeah.
We see Russell Wilson being the only person you could possibly blame four plays going sideways right now, and it has to be the injury.
He has 12 touchdowns and three interceptions with a pin in his finger. I mean, I'm just pointing that out.
And he's struggling to move the ball, though.
I know he is.
There was a 99-yard drive before that interception on the two-point conversion, too.
Yes.
So it's like, that's where you see the glimpse of that, where it's like, oh, wow, and then he looks the safety off, he throws a touchdown for 30 yards, and then he throws a pick to end the game, and you're like, oh.
And on the two-point conversion, DK Metcalf is waving his arms around like a madman because Russell doesn't see it.
How did he miss him? I mean,
are we apologizing to Pablo or not?
No.
Oh. We are. We haven't done enough in Tua praise. And we should, because we're Miamians, and that's what you do down here to avoid the Pablos and your Menchies.
Who you love, not Pablo, but
I love Tua. I love
He's Tua the best quarterback so they've had since Marino. I mean, is he not?
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, he's the most handsome, too.
Thank you, says Stu Gatz.
Pennington
I don't know why. I don't know why you're getting thank yous. I don't know why it is Stu Gatz.
We're not appreciating Tua enough.
I'll tell you what we're not appreciating enough, because you mentioned the Seattle-Washington game. All the graphics there are in football, I love these cartoon figures of guys with muscles that come up when touchdowns are scored. Something that we're not making enough fun of, something that really needs more attention from everybody, is the general weirdness when Washington scores a touchdown and all of the graphics come up, and instead of an emblem of anything, all they can put up is football team. Football team keeps coming up all over the place. Just generic football team that they still haven't figured this out, that this Native American problem that has plagued the franchise.
I like the football team.
Daniel Snyder has never changed the name, said he would never change the name. Then he gets into a scandal, toxic workplace. He's like, okay, never mind, we'll change the name. And now still, 2 years later, what keeps coming up, because they didn't secure all of the names and they didn't go to GoDaddy. And so people tried to... squat on Washington names. They remain in the graphic. It keeps it. It's spinning toward you. Football team. Football. It's like generic player in the video games.
I like football team. It's better than generic football team name like Defenders or Guardians.
There's only one football
Generals.
Team. Right?
No, there aren't. There are 32 football teams.
There's only one football team.
I love it.
Let's stop normalizing football team. This thing needs to change immediately.
Yes, it's
football team is a playoff team right
American
now.
American sports. City nickname.
Give me a name better than football
playoff team. Playoff team.
Someone should do that.
That would
I mean,
be a
someone
good
has to do that.
I would go, give me one generic sports name better than football team, and I'll concede.
Washington Pigskins.
No, I don't.
Then you
I
can
think
still
you
call them the Skins.
I don't like the Pigskins.
And you have the Hogs.
Any reference to the old name.
So when the controversy first happened and said they had to change the name, I was working radio with Zach Harper, and we opened up the phone lines and say, you tell us what you think the name should be. Wow. And this guy calls in and says, they should keep the name the same. And we're like, here we go. He's one of these guys who's going to say, oh, you know, tradition or whatever. He says, no. Here's what you do. You change the mascot to a potato. And now you can be Redskins because we're not talking about it like a slur. We're talking about potatoes. And I said, you know what? You bested me, caller. I thought you would be ignorant, but in fact, you turned out to be genius.
This move has actually been done with teams that call themselves the Warriors. Like the slight rebrand, like Warriors becomes this like mythical Greek god thing in the Golden State logo when it was like something different.
It was, yeah, the original. By the way, if you want to really laugh, look at NBA logos from like the 50s and 60s. Holy hell.
Just racist.
I mean, and just terrifying. What was the one? First of all, the Warriors original logo is just super racist.
Syracuse also did this too. All right, we'll take out men.
Orange.
Yes, they took out
St. John's, the Red Storm.
Yeah.
So it's not. We've seen it happen. It's not that ridiculous.
But a potato.
Yeah.
Potato invokes like tough football teams.
Have you not seen like with the fighting asparagus and like the all these the brust? You got to just make it mad, you know, like those minor league logos.
An angry potato. Yeah. An angry red potato. Taking an accidental front selfie when I'm sunburned. That's what you want their logo to be.
You give some arms, and the arms are kind of like running, and they're really cut.
Yeah. Like, if you have a minor league baseball team, you don't call them the raccoons. You call them the trash pandas, and you move on. Yeah.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Levitard Show. Can you make a potato a good mascot by simply making it look mean?
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Levitard.
During one long evening at the Burtons, Robert sent their guests Tennessee Williams and director Joseph Losey running for the door. When in Burton's words, she insulted Rex. She's talking about Rex Harrison. Rex sexually, morally, physically lay on the floor in the bar and bark like a dog, started to masturbate her basset hound.
Oh, Jesus Christ. What's happening?
I don't know. There's also another one here. This is the book. And I'm like, how do I, you know, because to Mike's point, he has to know I read the book. Well, okay, listen, I highlighted this part, so you know that I read it.
Stugatz.
Have you ever met Mike before today?
No.
No, first meeting.
So your thing is in the first 5 minutes, let's talk about dog masturbation and giraffe.
Because I knew he would be able to relate to the subject matter. He would know what it's
how
like.
So?
Because he's a guest on the show and the guy's trying to impress him. He goes, okay, what's going to go with? So I figured masturbating a basset hound was definitely something he could at least appreciate.
Weird assumption to make.
Was he right or wrong?
I'm going to say he was wrong.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stukats.
I've always thought this guy is hugely interesting, but concealed because he doesn't trust the media and he's got to be careful with his words and can't show everybody his interesting life hanging out with opera stars. So he managed to come through the Los Angeles labyrinth, all of the tabloids, the fame. Pau Gasol, champion, joins us now. Why are you telling us, and thank you for joining us, why are you telling us this story? I wouldn't have imagined that you would be that interested in something like this.
No, thank you for having me, first of all. And I just wanted to, you know, it was something that started once I suffered my second fracture, my navicular, up in Portland. It started with the desire, okay, I like the show. It wasn't just the you know, let's capture the rehab process. It was more like, how do you deal with hardship? How do you deal with uncertainty? And what are you going to do with it? And it was a, you know, it was challenging for me at that time, emotionally to, and physically to deal with that. And I say, I want to capture it. Also, as I'm also one of my concerns and something that I wanted to show was like, okay, how am I going to transition? I think I want to show the transition phase and preparation phase from such a special and unique chapter in life, in my life, which is like NBA career, into the next one. And the whole process of it, and after such a successful career, and how I dealt with it, and we dealt with it as a family, which I just wanted to show, you know, some of the principles and values that have dictated my life, how I do things, and show more of a human side, because a lot of people see, you know, the news here, the news there, the image, you know, the surface, but not what's really in it. And I think the documentary shows that, I think, really well, and I'm extremely proud and happy of how everything turned out, and very emotional, and because we went through not just the uncertainty of the recovery, but the uncertainty of life with the pandemic and many other things that happened.
I imagine, and I don't know for sure, but if this is what I think it is, because you, I don't know that I would call you guarded, but I don't know that we've been able to look inside your life either as a famous person for a long time who was winning championships in sports. But this transition is particularly hard for anyone. Like, I think you uniquely prepared for it, and it's still hard to bury your identity as a guy for 20 years who's been great at sports, and then you look around and you're like, oh, it's over. That's it. Now I got to get back to my family. That's it. It's done.
Well, that's part of it. You know, you cannot fall in love with a certain identity. You know, you should look at yourself inside and understand who you are as a person. You know, the titles or professions, they last only for so long. They have an expiration date, but you're still you. So you cannot fall in love with, oh, I'm just an NBA player, because once that is over, like, then who are you? Then that's where you get into that crisis, or a specific title, or with a specific show or career. So it's meant to share also how I approach that, and how I prepare for that, and how I, yes, an NBA has been such a huge part of my career, and playing basketball. I played basketball since I was 6 years old. And it's been a big part of my life, and I'm thankful for it, but life goes on, and that part of my life, it's over. And now it's, what can I do with everything that I've experienced and I've gained through that time in order to implement it into the next chapter, into the next ventures, into the next goals. And that's part of how I, you know, I approach this and what I'm trying to share.
And nothing will be like it. Like, you know that going in. You have an awareness. Everything you do from now on may be its own kind of fulfilling, but it will never match what the last 20 years of your life have been.
Without question. It won't. It'll be different. And different, it's fine. It's kind of like going through different stages and ages in life. You know, the 20s are great. 30s are great. But 40s are great, and you have to enjoy your 40s. You have to enjoy every stage and every step of the way. You can't get stuck into, oh, I wish I was 35 or 29, because I was so athletic, and, you know, I had so much energy, and yeah, that was fine, but that was just one part of your life. Now let's focus on enjoying the present. Let's focus on enjoying what's in front of us. And that's just also how, you know, the things, again, how I live my life. And so that's what the values that I try to share in within the documentary.
It's about the journey on Prime Video. Lightheartedly, I want to know the best, most memorable family fight you ever had. Any point in childhood with your brother, that tree trunk brother of yours, Marc Gasol. I imagine that he kicked your ass and he dragged you all over the floor just because. Look at him. How did that work? Did you drag him or did he drag you?
No, he definitely dragged me. you know, even though we're 4.5 years apart, he's always been the bigger guy, not height-wise, but, you know, he's always been wider and stronger. So, and I was always been like thin and lean. And so, yeah, a couple of, because I always pushed Mark. I always wanted Mark to first to know that I'm the old brother. Okay. I'm the big brother, and you don't mess with the big brother. But also to, you know, to motivate him and to see how he would react and push him to be better.
All right, so give us the story where you got your ass kicked because you did that. You pushed him to be better, and he got fed up.
He didn't care about your reminders of older brother, yes, by the way.
He didn't care you were the older brother.
Yeah, he didn't care. No, well, you know, I remember once that we, like, got tangled up, and I lost balance, and I fell on my butt, you know, and he kind of caught himself, like, oh, geez, I just – put my brother, my big brother, on the ground. And I don't know how old we were. I don't know if we were like 12 and he was 7 or something like that, or I was 10, he was 5. I don't know. But I remember a couple things where he would, you know, physically be a problem at a young age.
Because he's a brute, because he's crazy. The two of you, I can't even imagine how unusual you were as two, you know, that's an unusual childhood, is it not? To be two guys in the same house who grow up to be people who always need new shower heads or different beds because it's not the most normal thing in the world for two people to be 7 footers like that.
No, it's true. No, you have to talk to my parents about that, how that was like, and the challenges and how we ate, because we ate a lot too. And you had to buy a lot of extra food to feed these big guys or taller guys. But yeah, it was a challenge, and we played one-on-ones. You had, you know, in the national team, especially in the summers when we got together, and people would just sit and watch because we just beat each other up. And it would end up someone bleeding at the end of the one-on-one. You know, bust a lip or something, because we would go hard. We would go hard at it. I think in the docuseries, Shane talks about that, how we, every time we played against each other, yeah, it was great, but we went at each other and we wanted to win. So that's also part of our nature. And I think part of it, why we've been so successful, individually, but together mainly, because I think that that's where, as a family, we, two brothers that have accomplished so much in basketball and outside. That's what we're trying to do. It's not just about the basketball. It's about what you do with it outside of it. It's been great.
Pal, I don't think many – well, for those who don't know, Kobe Bryant, one of your closest friends, and so I am wondering, what do you miss most about Kobe? What do you miss about Kobe?
So much. His presence, knowing that you know, that I could always reach out and see him or call him and talk to him on the phone and get advice. Knowing that he's there for his wife and daughters, that's what I miss the most, for his family. You know, that's what pains me, because it's not just about me as a friend. It's about him as a father, him as a husband, him as a brother, him as a son. That's what I miss the most.
Pal, thank you for being on with us. Thank you for sharing your story with us. We do appreciate your time. You don't have the opera singers still in your life, do you? You're not an opera singer yourself, right? You just hang with the opera singers?
I'm a fan. I'm a fan and I'm a supporter. So I do hang sometimes with some opera singers because I like go to the opera and I support them and I admire what they do and what they provide to society. Just like the world of arts and culture. I think it's so important that we continue to support it because it provides a lot to our world.
I love that your entourage includes opera singers.
So we tried to sing like Ave Maria with you right now. You wouldn't do it?
You wouldn't do it? You wouldn't do it with us if we did as a show because we would do it poorly?
I would sit and watch. I would enjoy the show.
Okay.
Hey, sorry to interrupt, but we need to wrap now.
Okay. Look all at right. her ruining all the
I'd
fun.
I'd love to have your parents look on the talk about dragging you all over the house.
Get this lady out of here. Who's that lady? Get her out of here. What is she doing?
I just met her today.
Get her out of here. Get her out of here. We were talking. We were about to make the man sing.
Thank you, pal.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Good luck.
Love you guys. Okay.
Love you too, pal.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.